I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Welcome back to Wellness and Dentistry. I am your host, Dr. Kyle Stanley, and I'm here with your other host, Dr. Martin Mendelson. Martin is a speaker, a coach, an educator, and he's passionate about helping people get out of their own way.
And my other host is Dr. Kyle Stanley. He's a researcher, a tech entrepreneur, and a leader in bringing taboo topics to the forefront of dentistry. So, hey, Kyle.
That's right. Hello, Martin. Today, our topic is an important one.
Yep.
And this is the awareness of burnout.
Yep.
Why do you think this is so important?
Because I think that people just go and go and go. Like, you know, the old adage or the old fable about boiling a frog. You know, you put the frog in boiling water, it jumps out, but if you slowly heat it up, it stays in and it boils. We're so similar to that if you think about it, right? Because things don't just happen most of the time. They slowly build over time, and we accommodate and we make excuses, and then we kind of turn around and then we're like, oh, I feel terrible. So I think it sneaks up on us. So the awareness piece is important, you know?
That's such a great point. I was just talking with someone else and I was saying how all of the work you and I have been doing to bring wellness to dentistry, if at minimum, mm-hmm. we can bring awareness, I would be very happy.
Oh, absolutely.
And of course, the next goal after the awareness would be to bring tools, because after you're aware, then it's like, well, what do I do?
Yeah.
Then we want to bring the tools and the frameworks and the mindset shift and all this. But even if we just have the awareness, I love what you said about the boiled frog, mm-hmm. because I think that's what happened to me is I didn't notice the challenges I was having until I was at my breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
And had I been going down, and then figured it out, I could have made the shift and my fall wouldn't have been as far.
Yeah, no, 100%. And yeah, another analogy that kind of snuck up on me is the idea of, you know, if you have trouble maintaining weight or you easily gain weight, it's like you eat and eat and eat, or don't eat and don't eat and don't eat. And then the next thing you know, your clothes feel differently. Either they're mm-hmm. falling off or they're too tight, whichever you happen to be. But that too is a slow process. That didn't happen overnight, right?
That's true. But when you do see someone that you haven't seen for a long time, it's funny how they will recognize that.
Oh yeah, 100%.
So it's that big thing, that having awareness, you know, the first step in any kind of recovery, mm-hmm. and we've talked about this before,
yep.
is being aware of it, right? Saying, yep. I have a problem. Let's say you're a gambling addict, right? Mm-hmm. You have to admit, I have a problem, or yeah. there's something different. And I think that's the thing with burnout is I needed to understand and have the awareness of it in order to tackle it.
Yes.
It's like if you don't know it's there or it's possible or what even encompasses burnout.
Yeah.
100%. That's the other thing is you may talk to people and, you know, like I'll talk to dentists and I'll say, you know, are you feeling burnt out? And they'll be like, well, what does that really mean?
Exactly.
Because it's one of these colloquial terms that we use, but we don't really know the definitions. But when you know the definitions, that awareness can really help you.
Yeah.
So going to, if you want to hear some of the definitions when they were first brought about, you know, about, I think 30 years ago or so, or mm-hmm. no more, I think it was in the 70s. Was feeling exhausted,
yep,
cynical, and mm-hmm. ineffective,
yep,
in your job. And like even just that, even dentists knowing these three things and saying, okay, am I feeling exhausted? Am I feeling cynical? Am I feeling ineffective?
Yeah.
This makes it so much easier to then say, oh, maybe I am suffering from burnout. And they can have this, I don't know what I would call it. I almost think of, like, you know, in the movies when they depict an angel
mm-hmm,
looking
mm-hmm.
over you.
Yes. Yeah.
If you can get to the point of where you can be outside of your body looking down on you,
yeah,
that is really self-mastery, self-awareness.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, how you talk about living in the space.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the Viktor Frankl quote about there's a space between stimulus and response in your... between stimulus and response, there's a space. In this space is your freedom to choose your response, and in your response lies your growth and your freedom. So having the emotional intelligence, one of the things I love to talk about and assess with people, is really being curious enough and plugged in enough to be like, huh, I wonder why I reacted that way. Huh, I wonder why I'm thinking this way. This isn't me. You were talking about cynicism and being cynical. And I think one of the areas that I'm seeing this most, which makes a lot of sense, is in the area of team. Because in dentistry, and dentistry is not alone, it's not unique, we have a lot of team challenges, right? And so being cynical about being able to fill that spot and cynical about the process and so forth, that's burnout, because you've been operating from a place of less than having to, you know, bring it even more because you're short staffed. It becomes this whole domino effect of burnout and the ramifications therein.
There's so much with this burnout awareness too. It's like one of the big ones that I think you and I are so passionate about is stopping the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the people that are going through it that we want them to know what they're going through so they can take the appropriate steps to then
yep.
fix that, feel better. But then there's also just the fact of, we just want people to be able to talk about it and not yeah. feel like, you know, you're talking about politics at the dinner table.
Yes. Well, how many times at Lightside Live, our in-person course, have we heard people say, who are there, excited to be there to talk about mental health, that say, I thought I was the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people that signed up for a course to talk about it. So yeah. How interesting is that, that so many of us feel like we're alone, when the truth of the matter is that we're going through this common journey. The elements of the journey may differ here and there based upon where you are, the kind of practice, size of your team, but the stressors are the same.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And on that idea of isolation, you know, I was giving a lecture in Colorado Springs last week, and I asked people if anybody has had any of these symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I was like talking about overwhelm, team challenges, patient challenges, anxiety, depression, suicidality, any of this. 90% of the room raised their hand. And I said, everybody, keep your hand up and look around. If you came into here today thinking you were the only one,
mm-hmm.
guess what? You're normal.
Absolutely. 100%.
It's honestly the people that didn't raise their hand, either because
yeah.
they're nervous about not raising their hand or have never gone through it. They're the ones that actually are, I don't want to say abnormal like it's a negative thing, but it's a human problem.
Yeah.
That, you know, unfortunately, more dentists go through than other professions.
Yeah.
But having this awareness brings some, I don't know if it's solace or what the word I'm looking for is, peace, perhaps, to people that are in this dark time.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, it just made me think of something I hadn't thought of in a while. So in Sean Accor's book, The Happiness Advantage, he talks about when he was going through a difficult time and how detrimental it can be to not ask for help. And he talks about how he reached out to people and he was transparent with people, and what he got back just blew him away. And so for some of us, it's in our nature when we're having a difficult time, well, I'm going to keep it to myself. Well, from a mental health perspective, that's one of the worst things you can do. And so, you know, even if you look at times of very significant tragedy, one of the things that people always point to as a bright spot, even in the face of horrific tragedy, is how everybody came together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we certainly don't want to have horrific tragedy every day, but right. by the same token, how can we look for and look to our peers and our peeps, as I like to say, for help? And, you know, honestly, if people If you're concerned about being judged and people are judgmental toward you, then you have the wrong peeps. And that may sound really simplistic and really simple, but everybody does the best they can with the skills they have at the time. And if you reach out to somebody and you don't get what you need back, that's okay. That's more of a reflection of them than it ever was for you, because there is strength in asking for help. There's weakness in keeping it alone. The strong person is the one that asks for help. So that is such a huge part, asking for help, being communicative, being open so that you can get to that next place.
Yeah, it's something that Brené Brown talks about a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, she talks about how most people think vulnerability is being weak.
Yeah.
And I definitely saw this when I started talking about burnout and anxiety and depression. Was I thought it was kind of like me being weak. I couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
But to everybody else, they would come up to me and say, oh my gosh, you're so strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're so powerful for talking about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's this weird thing how when we're vulnerable, we feel so exposed and weak, but to everybody else, we look so strong and powerful.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
That, like, when she said that, it made so much sense to me, because I went through that exact issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I certainly did. I mean, when I became disabled a while back, I felt like I was completely alone. Like I had nobody to talk to, nowhere to go. You know, I'm really excited that the ADA, as an example, is really stepping up, particularly in recent years with wellness committees and some of the other things, because there's so many people out there that have shades of disability for professionally,
yes.
Shades of challenges, shades of not just mental health issues, but even substance abuse issues and so forth, that just being there for each other is so critical. Not to beat a dead horse, but it's just, we've spent so many years not doing it. It's like any other habit, I guess you could say. If you're not used to doing it, then it's not going to be your first knee-jerk response or go-to.
You know, and I think that goes back to awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad talks about how in the 70s, we knew that everybody had these issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they maybe didn't have the term burnout yet or some of these other terms, but there was no awareness happening. Like, people knew underneath.
Yeah.
It was like in secret that these problems were happening.
Yeah.
But there was no awareness. There was no openness to solve the challenge. It was more actually the opposite, which was, let's hide this.
Yeah.
So that we don't look like there's something wrong with us.
Well, I think we talked about this in one of the other episodes. It just blows my mind. One of your Lightsiders has become a client of mine too, who's my age. So he's 54.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated in 96. He shared that at a major dental school in the United States that'll remain nameless, he had an instructor come up in front of the class unsolicitedly and started talking about the fact that no one here should ever seek therapy or mental health assistance, because if you do, it will, quote, ruin your practice. You'll lose everything, he said. And I remember looking at this colleague of ours, and I looked at him, I said, that's what he said? He goes, yeah, verbatim. He goes, I've never forgotten it. And I'm thinking, well, shoot, I wouldn't either. That's incredible.
I've had people that have, you know, been in my courses or colleagues or whatever, reach out to me and have the same worries about taking medication.
Yep.
Do I have to disclose this? Because I think they ask you some of this stuff in certain states.
Yeah.
And so, you know, do you have to disclose you're on medication? Can your patients see that? Are they going to not want to come to somebody who, like you said, is going through mental health challenges, is taking medication, has gone through substance abuse, right?
Yeah.
And I think they're real valid questions, because there may be patients that may say, no, I don't want to do that. But I've found that the more human I am with the patients, the more I connect with them.
Yeah.
It was the opposite of what I thought it would be. I thought it would scare everybody away. And maybe it's this whole idea of being vulnerable, right? That you think it's going to scare everybody away, but it's actually such an attractive feature.
Yeah. And you know, the phrase consider the source. It's like, if you end up losing a patient because of that, is that really somebody that you would want to treat anyway? And if we're really honest with ourselves, yes, there may be some patients that are opposed to that, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be everybody. We know that, right? And, you know, I was also thinking as you were talk about stigma. Like, the brain is an organ just like your heart is, or just like your liver is, right? And so why do we have to end up disclosing brain dysfunction, but we don't have to disclose cardiac dysfunction or liver dysfunction or some other type of autoimmune disease? It's talk about stigma.
Like, yeah, that's very interesting. I was listening to Ben Akers, and he was saying, when people see someone exercising, they don't say, oh, poor guy, you know, they say, no, good for him, right? Or good for her. And we need to change the narrative from a negative view of mental health to a positive one of mental fitness.
Oh, 100%.
If we make it like maintenance, to where you don't say, oh, poor person, they're going through depression or anxiety. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can have empathy for them.
Yeah.
But it should be how great that they're doing something about it. You know, it's just like when we live on a hill, and whenever we see people walking or running up the hill, my wife and I are always like, wow, good for them. You know, like,
that's
wow,
quite
that
a hill.
Really, that looks really challenging. Yeah, no, it is quite a hill. Like, that looks really challenging. Oh my gosh. And we're always like, good for them. And I'm like, oh, what poor people that they actually have to exercise. And if we change that idea from mental health to mental fitness as maintenance, I love this idea.
Yeah. You know how much I love talk about habits, right? And I was prepping for a lecture the other week, and I realized there was a piece missing that I hadn't been talking about, because this is from Clear's book, James Clear's book. He talks about identity habits versus process habits. And so people, when they try to find intrinsic motivation, outcome habits. So identity versus outcome habits.
Okay.
So they look to the outcome. So let's use the physical fitness example. The outcome is getting buff or getting in shape or losing weight versus the identity, where you say, I'm a healthy person that does good for my body. That will help create intrinsic motivation much more effectively than trying to do it based on outcome. It's a fascinating flip of the switch, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. I see a lot of that in the fitness community, that it is more based on outcome. I think the older you get, the less it's based on outcome, and the more it's based on, I don't want to get hurt. I want to, you know, be someone who follows through with what I say.
Yep.
I want to be an example to my children, to my friends. And I think it's a very positive way of thinking about it. I like that. So you said intrinsic. Wait,
it was identity versus outcome based.
Identity versus outcome based.
You know? And so, you know what I find bizarre about this? Because it was a huge aha moment. So, you know, the Leadership Foundation that I talk about, there is no I in team, but there is me. And so I talk about leadership from the inside out. It's the same thing, because we're talking about the identity of the person and who they are and what's important to them and their perspectives and being aware of their own self. And then outward becomes the interaction and the lagging indicator. Because if you look at the leadership model on the outside ring, it's all of the outcomes. And on the inside, it's, you know, thoughts, emotions, actions, manifestations. It's so bizarre how in line that is. And it kind of blew my mind. And so the take home for me was that whether it's habits, whether it's mindset, whether it's burnout, whatever it is, we got to start between our ears. And we have to acknowledge it so that we can move forward in a different way by just understanding what's going on between our ears and, you know, also not necessarily listening to all those negative thoughts that creep into our brain all the time.
You went through your team framework. Can you go over that one more time? You'll talk about it more.
So it's an acronym of the word team. So it stands for thoughts drive emotions that drive actions that manifest results. So everything that we occur in life, or that we come upon in life, is neutral. It's our thought that gives it power. The fact that your buddy didn't text you back is neutral, right? But if you put a thought to it that they don't like you anymore, it's going to drive feelings of anger that could drive an action of maybe a nasty text. But if it's a really good friend of yours, how does it manifest the maintenance or elevation of that friendship? It doesn't, right? I was writing an article for a dental magazine the other day, and I made this example of, okay, let's say we have a protocol in our office where we don't leave dirty instruments unattended, meaning you bring them in the sterilization room, they have to be processed immediately, at least go in the ultrasonic as an example. Mm-hmm. So you come in, you see a tray of dirty instruments, you know whose instruments they are based upon the instruments on the tray, and you get all mad and you're going to walk down the hall and you're going to give this person a piece of your mind. And you walk into the break room and there's that person in tears. Mm. Why? Because something horrible just happened. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye, everything changed. What mm-hmm. really changed? Yeah, you could argue it's a scenario. No, it's not. It's your thought about it. Because you could have easily walked in there and go, oh, I wonder why that was left, not who do they think they are? It's just a thought, right?
And that change in the thought will then change your emotions,
mm-hmm.
will then change your actions,
yep.
will then change how you manifest results.
Bingo. Bingo.
Amazing.
You know? And it's yeah. And it's the same goes for burnout. We have to be challenging of our thoughts to understand, you know, the thoughts that's going on in our head. Like you talked about, a really one of the symptoms I very much relate with is cynicism. And so if you start having these cynical thoughts, we got to question ourselves. One of my favorite coaching questions, how true is that really? Because if we're having cynical thoughts, it's driving emotions of anger or, you know, stubbornness that's going to drive certain actions. It's not going to manifest what you're looking to do.
Yeah. For me, the ineffectiveness and the cynicism was connected.
Mm.
So it was, I had complications, clinical complications. I may have had patients that wanted their money back for something
mm-hmm.
or they weren't happy with something. So that made me feel ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
Which then led to my cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much connected for me.
Sure.
And then, you know, I came in, let's say the next day, thinking, is this just going to happen again?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I think, where that cynicism really crept in for me.
It's almost like what you're describing is, you know, catastrophizing, where yeah. you've had one or two things occur. And now everything is that way,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you know, you get up in the morning and you spill coffee on your scrubs or coffee on your shirt, whatever, doesn't matter. And you're driving to the practice and someone cuts you off. And it's like, nobody can drive these days. I'm having a bad day. Well, why are you connecting all of these isolated things? Are they fun experiences? No, I didn't say they were. But what I'm going to challenge you to think about is the idea that you are making a choice to connect all of these and telling yourself a story that you're having a bad day because of an isolated incident of spilling coffee and having somebody cut you off.
Yes. You say, did you have a bad day or did you just have, what did you say, 5 minutes?
I always say, did you have a bad day or did you have 5 minutes that you turned in at 24 hours?
That's right. Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, good. I think this has been a good discussion.
Yeah.
On the awareness of burnout and the importance that the very first step that we need is yes. for people to know that it exists.
100%.
In the 100%. Dental community, we need to know burnout exists.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem.
Yep.
And not only that, but there are tools, there are ways of getting better.
Absolutely. And I know one of our other episodes, we talked all about time off and you were the one that taught me this, that on average, only 10% of dentists take any time off, which just blows my mind. So, mm-hmm. you know, there are definite things that we can do relative to reducing that burnout, whether it's taking a time off, like we talked about, more effective delegation, because mm-hmm. delegation isn't always a person, by the way. It can be a thing. It can be a piece of software. It can be a system, yeah. right? But if you're not aware, you're never going to find those solutions. So
yeah.
you got to be aware.
So I think this is like, it's the first step.
Yeah, 100%.
First step is being aware,
yep.
realizing there's a problem. And this is why the first step in my Light Side Academy is realize, which is yep. realizing there's a problem, acknowledging the current situation, being real with yourself,
yep.
being honest with changes that may have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like the analogy you gave of gaining weight or losing weight, right? Let's be honest with myself. Hey, you know, I have gained weight. I have lost weight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next step is, okay, I've acknowledged that. I'm aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
How do I solve this?
Yep, 100%.
And we're going to go into that in a lot of different episodes, step by step. Like we have one coming up about time off. You know, we have things about being isolated in dentistry
mm-hmm.
that you guys will hear very soon. But I think this is the first step.
Yeah.
Being aware it is a problem, and then going to the next step.
Amen. Sounds
all
good.
Right. If you guys are interested in anything that we do, whether it's Martin's coaching, his speaking, my online courses, my tech company, anything that we do, go to wellnessindentistry.com and you'll see all of our links there, or you can contact both of us on Instagram. Those links are also there on Wellness in Dentistry. So we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks. See you soon.